Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
A little after high noon. Thanks so much for tuning in. It's a very cool Saturday. Hockey weather. That's what we'll call it in the middle of Movember. I see Connor is honoring the month. We'll talk about that a little bit later on. He's got something going there. I'll wait and see if it moves, and then we'll talk about his mustache. We've got a very busy show for you today. Jonathan Willis from Cult of Hockey, Nations Network, Hockey Prospectus, ESPN Insider. We'll talk about the Oilers game tonight and that defense, what they're going to do. A few other things from Jonathan as well. We'll have Trevor Moan from Arctic Ice Hockey talk Jets and their improvement and their game this afternoon. JP Nakoda from Pension Plan Puppets and Leafs Nation. Very busy week for Toronto. Lots of injuries. Lots of Ron Wilson at press conferences, and apparently a rumor today that Brian Burke is going to be on Twitter soon. We'll look forward to that. Someone is going to join us from Committed Indians, a Blackhawks blog, and Jesse Rogers from ESPN Chicago. We'll talk about the Hawks and their loss last night in Calgary, and probably they'll show up in a grumpy mood, and that's likely not good news for the Edmonton Oilers. Speaking of the Oilers, lots to talk about today. A few items that have just moved in the last half hour or so. Corey Potter gone for a month. That's the latest word. Andy Sutton out 7 to 10 days. Habby Boulin will start tonight. Sam Gagner will draw back into the lineup. Speaking of the lineup, the likely lines go like this tonight. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins between Ryan Smith and Jordan Eberle. Gagner back in the lineup with Pajarvi and Hemsky. Horkoff between Hall and Ryan Jones. And Eric Bélanger centering the fourth line. Anton Lander, Ben Eager, part of that group. The D pairings, what with the injuries to now Cam Barker, Andy Sutton, and Corey Potter, look like this. Ladislav Smead with Gilbert, the top pairing. Peckham and Petrie will have to play a lot of minutes. And Taylor Chorney and Colton Tubert, the pair called up from Oklahoma City. They'll be the third pairing today with all those injuries. And Habby Boulin, of course, starts. A week ago, the Oilers were still in first place in the Northwest despite having lost two games in a row. They were a point up on the surging Minnesota Wild, 3 points clear of Colorado and Vancouver, and 7 wonderful points in front of Calgary. I was mocking Kent Wilson a week ago. It's my fault. Today, different picture. Oilers in second place. They're 5 points behind the Wild, now 1 ahead of Vancouver and Colorado, and that 7-point lead over Calgary down to 3. Injuries all over the place. We talked about that very briefly at the top of the show. More on that as we go. Oilers have to turn it around. There are some signs that Coach Rennie is willing to shuffle the lines a little bit. We saw that with the lineups just mentioned a couple of minutes ago. I think the real item tonight will be how much the forwards come back and support that young defense, especially the third pairing, but also Peckham and Petrie on the second pairing. The blue line is definitely a Melva Hess. We'll talk about that today. I think probably with Habby Boulin starting tonight, that's a real indication now that Dubnyk is in a backup role and they're going to run Habby Boulin ragged until he, you know, becomes less effective. And we've seen a little bit of that this week. But with a young lineup, I'm sure Coach Rennie's thinking is you want to have the veteran goalie back there. We have a few other things to talk about, too. It's a really eventful week. After 150 days, the Ryan Smith-Colin Fraser deal is finally final. It's Fraser and a 7th-round pick, plus some medical bills, and that's it. I think it's the most bizarre story since they scoped the Charles Kamsel for ghosts a few years ago, and closes a rather bizarre chapter in Oilers history. It is and will remain a great trade, easily the best during the Steve Tambellini watch as his time as Oilers GM. Linus Olmark is out for 6 weeks with a broken ankle. It might be a costly injury. I don't think he's going to stay in Oklahoma City for another year, so that means with these 6 weeks, we're getting more towards the trade deadline and something might happen. There's an NHL player there, I believe that, but it might not be in Edmonton. It looks like circumstance and the depth is going to maybe end his Oiler career. We'll see, but this 6 weeks really puts a hole in his season. Oscar Klefbom from the Swedish Elite League, the other first-round pick this past summer, has a concussion again. It's a long season. Injuries are to be expected. This is definitely number two. Quoting the Swedish blog Swedish Oil, Klefbom was hit in the head by a Russian forward, had to leave the game recently, didn't play in the tournament after that. He did suffer a concussion. He's not playing currently, and that is definitely a concern for Edmonton Oilers fans with regard to Oscar Klefbom. Oklahoma City Barons. We'll talk about them today as well. They keep rolling along. Phil Cornet and Tyler Pitlick among the goal scorers last night. Both Barons, Tubert and Chorney, are with the club, and they are playing tonight. So that's the background. That's the information that we have for you going in. Potter, if you haven't heard, is gone for a month. Andy Sutton, 7-10 games. Habib Bullen starts tonight. Rennie did go ahead with the lineup shuffle, and it looks like Pajarvi and Gagne getting a bit of a push based on what we're seeing Alex Hemsky on their line. 6 minutes after 12, and our first guest today is Mr. Jonathan Willis. Jonathan, how are you, man?
I'm doing great, Alan. How are you?
Where are you right now?
Fort St. John.
So that Greece trip this summer looks pretty silly now. You could be there now if you'd arranged your life a little differently.
If only I were a little smarter, I'd be somewhere warm this winter. I completely agree.
Well, I'm not going to ever criticize you for being smart, because there was a time when Jonathan would come on and I'd say it's Jonathan Willis from Oilers Nation, and now it's Oilers Nation, ESPN. Do you have actual time to do a job anymore, or is this a full-time gig for you, buddy?
It's right now it's kind of a part-time this, part-time my day job, but come January, I'm planning to go full-time with writing.
Excellent. Well, congratulations, because, you know, you do great work. And one of the pieces that I wanted to talk to you about today, and I have to say I had two reactions. One was a chuckle, and then somebody might have broken you. And so I read on, and it wasn't the case. You weren't broken. But your article at Oilers Nation, Statistics Are Dumb, was, I think, long overdue, and was a great article because it married the two and said, hey, you don't have to be one or the other. Tell me about that background and about the article.
Okay. Basically, statistics have this reputation as being you have to be kind of an egghead. You have to be you're sitting there with your spreadsheets and your glasses pushed down your nose and figuring out this, that, and the other thing. And you don't have time to watch the actual games because you're fiddling around in Excel. But the truth is statistics are really pretty simple, the ones that people use on a day-to-day basis. And the biggest factor in making statistics is just sitting down, watching the game, and counting. So the big thing in the blogosphere right now is tracking scoring chances, which is done at mc79hockey.com. And Dennis King's the one who does that. I think you've had him on the show before, Alan.
Mm-hmm.
He does a great job. He sits down, he calculates where shots are coming from on the ice and just records when a scoring chance happens and when it doesn't. And all these statistics really come from just sitting down, watching the game, and tracking things. So when I example would be face-offs. So nobody really considers face-offs to be a super advanced statistic, but what they do is you track wins and losses. So if I watch a guy during a game, if I watch, say Sean Horkoff, I might not know, I probably don't have a good idea from just sitting down and watching the game how many face-offs he's won and lost, how he's done in the circle. I might have a general idea, but by counting face-offs, we know the actual number, we can assign a value to it. And advanced statistics are basically just more of that. So scoring chances, we sit down, we assign a number to it rather than going off sort of a more vague feeling. And I think that's where there's a disconnect, is people think, well, you're making decisions based on statistics, when really the statistics are just trying to quantify what it is that we're watching.
I approach it based on I watch the entire game and I really don't follow any stats in game. But it's funny how often facts get in the way of a good story. I thought the Oilers owned the other night in the first 7.5 minutes, and I could have sworn that the fourth line was responsible for the turnaround. Like, they were going well, and then there was a couple of turnovers, and I blamed the fourth line. But I looked back on the statistics, and I couldn't find that to be the case. Was that your reading of that game against Ottawa as well?
One of the hazards of living out here in the boonies is you get internet breakdowns from time to time. So I caught most of the Ottawa game, but I had a little disruption there in the early going. So I can't comment specifically to that situation.
Okay, well, let me rephrase it then. How often when you're watching a game and then after the game is over, does the math marry up to what you thought you saw?
I'd say it's easily more than half the time. Where it falls down is usually where I wasn't focused in on a particular player. So, I mean, when you're watching the play, there's a lot going on the ice, but And it's hard sometimes to pick out individual contributions when you're watching, you know, 10 skaters per side plus the goaltenders. So where it usually comes in handy for me is where a guy, if he's had a quiet game or I haven't really picked up on him, looking at the scoring chances, I get a better idea of how they've done.
Do you look for specific things during the game, or do you just kind of let it wash over you and watch as a fan?
No, I definitely look for specific things. The big thing that I can't help but watch now is coaching strategy,
mm-hmm.
where players are going on the ice, who they're matching up against. And I find I can't not look for that now when I watch the game. I have to try and put myself in the coach's head and try and figure out what it is he's doing, why he's playing this line against those guys or in the defensive zone or the offensive zone.
So you're the one screaming at the television, why does he have the fourth line on after the commercial break then, right?
Exactly, yes, I'm that guy.
All right, let's talk Oilers here. The Blue took a huge hit this week, three players going down. The most pertinent information is that Corey Potter is out for a month, Andy Sutton not quite as long, 7 to 10 days, and Cam Barker also. Huge impact on this team.
Oh, definitely, especially the loss of Potter. He's been a real revelation for I think everybody playing a legitimate top four role, and it's going to be very difficult to replace his impact.
Is looking at the team right now, I think most Oilers fans are really counting on Ryan Whitney coming back and hopeful that he'll be back soon. The problem with Whitney is he does seem to be a little bit injury prone, and this year it looks like a disaster in the making. Are the Oilers at a point now, Jonathan, you think, where they might be trolling for another NHL defenseman?
Well, I think they should be. I don't know if they are. It's hard to get a firm read on where they figure they ought to be in the rebuilding process this season. I don't know if they're looking at it as a year where they should be trying to push for a playoff spot, or they should just kind of sit back and see what happens. I thought they should have addressed the blue line more than they did this summer. Cam Barker, I didn't think really addressed the need for a top four defenseman that they had, particularly with Whitney's uncertain injury status this summer. And I just think it might be too late to make a really meaningful move. I'm sure they'll probably add a warm body who can play regular minutes, but I don't know if they can really bolster the blue line at this point in the season.
Let's talk about the recent news, and this is as of I saw Jason Greger tweet yesterday, and it's confirmed in the lineups today. It looks like Coach Rennie has finally been a little creative with the lines and shaken up the kid line and the veteran Horkoff-Smith line. The let's go through them one at a time. The top line right now is Nugent Hopkins between Smith and Eberle. There's some chemistry there and a lot of good hockey.
Yeah, definitely. I think I'm a little bit, I saw that and I thought to myself that it's an interesting place to put Smith, since he's done such a great job of playing two-way hockey. But I think the only way to read it is as an attempt to integrate Ryan Nugent-Hopkins beyond the role of offensive specialist. We saw last year when they had Horkoff centering Eberle and Hall, that Horkoff was sort of there to mentor and shelter the younger players, and I think we'll see the same thing with Smith. This will mean that Tom Rennie's been deploying Nugent Hopkins as a pure offensive player, only offensive zone starts, mostly against subpar opponents, except he couldn't do it on the road, of course. And I think now we'll see that sort of come to an end if Smith is a regular winger for Nugent Hopkins.
Do you think it's also kind of a hat tip to Jordan Eberle and his solid two-way play that they're putting him on a line where there's going to be expectations and they're going to be hard matched against some pretty good hockey players?
Yeah, I think so. Eberle has he surprised us all, I think, last year with just how competent a two-way player he was, and the fact that he's being used in that position really does show some trust on the coach's part.
The other thing they've done, the second line, as listed by the Oilers in their release today, has Gagné between Pajärvi and Hemski. It looks like a little bit of a push for Gagné coming back and a genuine effort to put Magnus Pajärvi into more of an offensive situation.
Yeah, I think, I mean, you talk to the fans, like, the bottom two lines have been a real source of weakness for the Oilers. There's some solid players there, but they're not generating any offense. And it's a situation where you've got three guys, because Hemski hasn't really been stellar since coming back from injury. We have three guys who are struggling a little bit, but all have talent. And with any luck, they can get some softer offensive minutes, some of the treatment that Nugent Hopkins and the kids were getting, and find their offensive game a little. Because the Oilers really need that scoring from further down the lineup. They need to have more than two lines going.
I'm a big-time fan of Alex Hemsky. I think he's worth the price of admission, but he really did have one of his more invisible games last time against Ottawa. Do you think that's more likely injury and him coming back, or there's a lot of talk. I know Bruce McCurdy over at Cult of Hockey has really been pushing the idea that there may be an injury and you know, maybe he's just not shooting enough. Is that a concern?
I think so. I'm certain that, especially with Hemsky's injury history, you always have to watch for it. And when you mentioned Bruce's arguments, I think they make some sense. You watch him play that maybe that shoulder's bothering him a little. But the other thing with Hemsky, too, is it seems every year we have a stretch where we're wondering what's going on with Alex Hemsky. He's only been back in the lineup for not very long right now. He wasn't great in those final towards the end of the road trip and again against Ottawa. So I wonder if maybe we're not overstating things given how short a time it's been. Because we've seen him have five bad games in a row before. Mm-hmm. He's a kind of player who does get and go on hot streaks and cold streaks, and so there may be an injury, but I don't know if I'd read that into it for sure yet.
Okay. The most interesting for me at first blush with this lineup is that Taylor Hall is on the third line with Ryan Jones and Sean Horkoff. If I was making up a lineup with the ideal situation for Taylor Hall, that wouldn't be it. Do you think this is a message, or this is a matter of just a shuffle on Rennie's part?
I don't know, to tell you the truth, but the one thing that it will do for Taylor Hall is let him be the man on that line offensively. I've noticed certainly this year that Hall has he kicks the puck a lot. He leads a lot of rushes. He's really a catalyst for a line. You have one guy. If you're going to have one guy who carries the puck, he wants to be that guy. And with Horkoff and Jones, he'll get that opportunity to be the main offensive player. I also think it's a position of responsibility for him, because that's where Ryan Smith was, and that line's been taking on some really difficult minutes. I'm curious to see if they'll continue to be Rennie's go-to choice, or if Rennie eases up on the line matching. I know you've suggested he may go move away from being a hard matching coach, and this new lineup kind of suggests that as a possibility.
Yeah, and the fourth line, Belanger, Lander, and Eager. The only question I have in that regard is Petrel not in the lineup, so the penalty killers are at a guess likely to be Belanger, Horkoff, Smith, and Jones.
I think so. I think we'll probably see the coach go to two main pairings and maybe see him spot some other players in there just on a lower basis, I guess.
Okay, and a question from Cameron about the Rookie of the Year race. He wants to know the rookies, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins compared to Connolly, Gudbranson, Landeskog, the other candidates. Where do you see Nugent-Hopkins? Is he a strong contender, or would you consider him the favorite?
I think at this point I'd probably consider him the favorite. We've seen some strong play from some unheralded guys. I'm thinking notably of Craig Smith in Nashville, who's really lit things up in the early going. But the way Nugent Hopkins has played, the minutes he's been asked to handle, the importance of him to the team, I think makes him one of the front runners. And if we had a vote right now, I think he'd probably win by a fairly healthy margin.
Okay, Jonathan, I follow you now because your Twitter account has all your different, you know, guises. I mean, good Lord, we need a website to contain all this, but the Twitter works well. What can we look forward to you for this week?
I'm hoping to get a real solid look at Columbus. They're an interesting team for me, particularly with the number of ex-Oilers, Scott Housen running the team, the former assistant GM. And anytime you see something go as badly as the rebuild Blue Jackets have gone, you kind of are curious to see why. So I want to dig into that. Beyond that, I want to do some more with scoring chances, particularly with the Oilers and with the Maple Leafs.
You know, with Columbus, I have a theory about them. I want to put it out to you and then see if I'm right. I think they're a way better hockey club than anybody thinks they are, except for goaltending.
Yeah, that's my read on the situation as well. I haven't dug into them as much as I'd like to. I've caught a couple of games, and my impression is that they're not a great club, but that they're a decent club, except in that they've really been let down by some injuries and by Steve Mason's just atrocious play so far.
Jonathan, I know you're on vacation so often. I just am so appreciative of us getting a few minutes with you before your next time in Hawaii, wherever it is.
It's always a pleasure to come on the show, Alan. I like getting the opportunity.
Are they building you an airport in Fort St. John so you can skip out quicker, or how's that going?
Well, we do everything by dog sled to Grand Prairie. And
Hey, I had to wear a balaclava on the way in here, buddy, so it's cold here, too.
Yeah, digging out my driveway the other day, I thought I was in the Arctic somewhere.
No, I know. Hey, Jonathan, thanks so much.
It's a real pleasure. Thanks again.
Okay, that's Jonathan Willis. You can read him on the interwebs, all kinds of different places. It looks like in January, more Jonathan. And great guy. One thing I have to say about Jonathan, whenever you read him, I always feel like he does combine the Somme good group and then also the math guys. And he combines it in a way that I think everybody can come away feeling a little wiser. And that's his gift. And that's why he is such a successful blogger and a guy that we like having on the show. It's 12:22, a very, very busy day. We have five guests today. So we're going to scoot right to Sam from Committed Indian and talk a little bit about the Chicago Blackhawks and the Oilers tonight. And that's coming up next. This is Nation Radio, presented by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
12:27, a busy night. Oilers in action. Hockey Night in Canada Game 2, hosting the Chicago Blackhawks. Lots happening news-wise around the team today. Corey Potter gone for a month, high ankle sprain. Andy Sutton, 7-10 games. Habby Boulin will start again, and Gagne back in the lineup, and he'll be centering Magnus Pajärvi and Alex Hemsky. And that's an interesting line. Also, Horkoff with Hall and Jones, and the top line tonight, RNH with Smith and Eberle. So, sharing the wealth. Those top three lines look like they're going to be a little bit of offense there for everybody. And the only thing about a veteran coach is they always start, the lineups are like that. And I remember McTavish. I know he was always known as Mac Blender, but honestly, you know, you'd get these lines and I'd be staring at them and I'd go, well, this is going to be interesting. And then after the first, you know, 2-on-1, it would be back to the old way. Oh, I got my veterans out there. And I mean, who can blame an NHL coach for going with his veterans? That's the wise move. But I'll tell you what, this is going to be an interesting lineup tonight. A tough night for Edmonton Oilers, especially that blue line. They're going to be a tough bunch there. Connor, by the way, before we go any farther, I want to talk to you about that thing on your upper lip there. Was it? Did you cut yourself, or is that an actual mustache?
That's an attempt at a mustache.
It actually looks really good. You're doing just fine. I'm
having a good mustache day.
It looks good. It's good.
Shampooed it last night.
Yeah. Well, it looks. I mean, you know, everybody can tell you what you had for supper last night, but good on you for growing it, and that's good. How are you doing in the Movember race? Are you kicking ass, or?
I checked my current positioning. 45,215th.
45,000?
Yeah, so.
That's unfair.
That's at $105.
That's a top 30,000 mustache, for sure.
That's at 25,000, at least.
Okay, well, let's go. So how do we help you? How do we assist in your efforts?
You can go to, you know, just go to Google, search Movember.
Movember?
You can go to the Canadian page and search Connor Halley.
Okay, that's H-A-L-L-E-Y?
Yeah, C-O-N-N-O-R, H-A-L-L-E-Y.
Okay, what's your PIN number? No, I'm just kidding.
It's all online. So credit card and
beautiful. Well, let's get you in the top by this time next week. I want to know that you're in the top 25,000.
Let's do it.
All right. Look forward to that. We're joined now by a very interesting Sam Fells from Second City Hockey. Sam, how are you this afternoon?
I'm all right. How are you?
Very well. I get the feeling that Chicago, even despite last night's loss, is a team that could push towards winning the Western Conference again this year. They really do have an outstanding amount of talent.
Yeah, they, you know, the record is glittering. I don't know if the performances match the level of the record that the record would state. They have some holes is too strong, but some things they need to work on, but things do look pretty good so far, you know, the quarter of the way through the season. But as you know up there, it's a very, very long season, and a lot can go wrong.
tell me about center. It seems as though, you know, I mean, I watch the Hawks quite a bit. So they obviously Taves and they moved Kane over. But they seem very deep there. But I keep reading that a few people thinking that they need to add some depth there. Is it a matter of needing wingers or defensemen or centermen for the Chicago Blackhawks right now?
Well, I guess it depends on what day you're reading. You know, one day people think this Patrick Kane at center thing is a permanent solution. The next day they think it's only a stopgap till they acquire another one. At the moment, I think the consensus here is the Hawks are one top six winger short of what they need. You know, they're playing Victor Stahlberg and Dan Carcillo there, neither of which, you know, although Stahlberg's played very well, it's not a long-term thing, we think. So at the moment, the consensus is they need a winger, and they'll leave Kane at center because the way the Hawks play offensively, it doesn't really matter where Kane is lining up. He's going to have the puck regardless. So it's just a matter of can he do his defensive responsibilities as a center. And so far he has. You know, we'll see what happens when the pressure gets tuned up and, you know, in the spring. But so far it's worked out. So I think if I had to call it right now, they'll probably be looking for a winger.
So with that in mind, and I know they've made some moves, waiver moves and that sort of thing, is it a point at which when they get to the deadline that they're going to have enough to not go to Marian Hossa, but an impact kind of winger to add to this group?
They should be able to. They have a few defensemen down with their AHL team who are all very promising. You know, Dylan Olsen's one name that you'll hear. They have a few center prospects, one of them who's playing with them now, Marcus Kruger. The thing is, with the Hawks, you know, if this Kane at center thing is your permanent solution, you also have Patrick Sharp who can play center, then your top three centers are set for I don't know how many years in a row with Taves, Kane, and Boland. Those guys aren't going anywhere. So players like Marcus Kruger or Mark McNeil, who's in junior, or Brandon Peary, who's in AHL, these guys don't really have anywhere to go. So are those chips enough to get you, you know, Jerome McGinley if he goes on the block or someone else? Probably not, but they're enough to get you a second-tier winger who can, you know, chip in maybe 20, 25 goals a year, I should think. But, you know, I'm not on the phone with these NHL GMs, so I don't know what they're asking.
One thing that I found in watching the Hawks is it's already ridiculous on the blue line with Keith, who had a tough night last night, but obviously is an outstanding player, and Seabrook. But this Letty kid, right. This Letty kid looks like another one of those 20 to 25 minute a night two-way defensemen that Chicago seems to, you know, grab every once in a while. Minnesota must be just kicking themselves every 5 minutes about this guy.
Yeah, it's a weird trade where they give up not only, you know, their number one prospect, but someone who's from Minnesota was their Mr. Hockey as well. You'd think, you know, that's the guy you'd build a team around because, you know, you can do all sorts of things with him. But, you know, Nick Letty, he's, especially in the last 10 games, he's really grown. You know, most people around here think I hate Nick Letty, which isn't the case. I just think, I just thought they settled. A 19-year-old kid with a way too much responsibility. You know, the Hawks' game is so possession-based and so speed-based that they need someone other than Duncan Keith to be able to transition them from one end to the other. Now, Brian Campbell did that expertly, even though everyone hated him around here because he actually made serious money. And I thought trading him was a year too early because I didn't see where Nick Letty had proven that he could handle all that. Now, he hasn't quite done that yet, but since they stopped pairing him with Duncan Keith, which just didn't make any sense whatsoever. We were treated to about 15 games with both of them rushing up the ice and then staring at each other while someone broke away alone the other way. They've paired him with Nick Hjalmarsson in the past 10 games or so. His game has just grown almost exponentially since then because he knows he always has someone covering for him. And he can still get his head kicked in his own end if he's facing a pretty stern forecheck. There can be some hiccups, but going the other way, you know, he's got this great ability to always get his shot through, which is something we'd love him to teach Duncan Keith, who has this need to bang things off the first shin pads he finds. You know, his game, just watching him grow just this past month has been a true treat.
Before we leave the blue line, it would be reprehensible if I didn't mention your new superstar offensively, Steve Montador.
Right.
What's going on with that guy?
Well, in Coach Quinville's weird lab where nothing makes sense, the power play wasn't working there for a while, and everyone was complaining they were using four forwards on the first unit, so he thought he'd one-up us all and use three defensemen on the second unit just to, you know, make things even sillier than they already were. And somehow it worked. So Montadori was the guy in front of the net. He chipped in two goals. But at even strength, you know, they finally started giving him some minutes. For some reason, Quinville didn't trust him to begin the season. He was only skating about 10, 12 minutes a night. But now he's been in the lineup more regularly, been paired with Keith while Seabrook's been hurt. And they've given him more license to get forward, which is actually an underrated part of his game. You know, he was sort of signed as more just a crease-clear, sort of hard to play against defensive, but he does have really a nice offensive game, and he hasn't been hesitant to jump in the play recently, and with everything starting to click for the Hawks, it's been a real benefit for them.
Coach Quenneville used John Scott a lot last night. Was that a matter of benching Keith and just going to somebody else, or does he really see a defenseman in him?
You know, these days I don't even know what Quenneville sees. I couldn't begin to tell you. It's been the main subject of our blog and our Twitter feed. We cannot fathom any reason on earth why John Scott even comes close to the lineup. We don't even know why he's on the team, but it's just something that Quenneville insists on doing. He did bench Keith last night because the game was a blowout. I think he just wanted to conserve minutes with Edmonton coming up tonight, so Scott actually got some regular shifts. But if the game had been anything close, you would have seen Scott skating no more than 7 or 8 minutes, and no one can figure out why. And no one bothers to ask around here because everyone's terrified of Quenneville. So I don't know what to say. I wish I had an answer for you. I just don't. It drives us all up a wall. And I hope I never see him in the lineup again, but I know I will. And it'll probably take weeks, if not years, off my life.
I'm so glad I asked that question.
We've been having a fight via Twitter. You know, how manly is that with the regular beat writers here in Chicago? Because they just won't ask what it is that Quenneville sees in Scott, because he can't skate, he can't pass, he can't do anything. No one will fight him, even if that provides a benefit to the team, which I'm not convinced it does. And he just keeps popping up there. You know, and the defense was, well, the Hawks had won 4 in a row, with him in the lineup, and that's sort of on the same level with this rock keeps Tigers away, here in Chicago. It just doesn't add up. But what can I say?
So I was planning on, when I was preparing this interview, I was going to talk about special teams and how important that was and this road trip. But the special teams didn't kill the Hawks last night. It was even strength play. Was that just one of those, you know, I think it was Casey Stengel who said you're going to lose 50 games, you're going to win 50 games no matter what, and 62 are what you fight over. Was that one of those games that we're going to lose no matter what?
That's just kind of what it felt like last night. You know, the Hawks, it's hard to stress how important and how indicative Duncan Keith is to what the Hawks do. When Duncan Keith is bad, the Hawks will lose. And when he's good, the Hawks will win, as you saw in the game against Vancouver. Duncan Keith was Norris-level Duncan Keith, and the Hawks win, only give up one goal. When he's a little wonky, as he was last night, they're going to lose. It's pretty much that simple. They need him not only to be good, they need him to be dominant. And, you know, Seabrook is out, and that doesn't help. But it was just one of the, you know, they were turning the puck over in their own zone. Everyone was involved. Hjalmarsson somehow gotten slower in the past year. I don't know how. And it's just one of those things that now, you know, Letty's covering some of his warts. But just one of those nights where it doesn't add up. You know, the special teams aren't going to make a difference.
Sam, where can we read you?
You can catch me a few different places. I'm all over. SecondCityHockey.com, that's our Blackhawks blog on SB Nation. From there, you can read the unofficial game day program I write for every Hawks home game called The Committed Indian that we sell outside. You can get that as an email subscription. And if that's not enough of me for you, and I sincerely hope it isn't, you can catch me on NBC Chicago's Madhouse Enforcer blog. I do their Hawks blog as well.
Sam, this has been very entertaining. Thank you for your time.
Anytime, Alan.
All right. That's Sam Fels. What an interesting guy and a funny guy, too. I have never, ever in my life heard a more entertaining breakdown of a defense for an NHL team. That was gold. Gold, Jerry. It's 12:40. We continue. Trevor Moan from Winnipeg Jets. We're going to talk a little bit about the Jets and their game this afternoon. Also, Jesse Rogers from ESPN Chicago after 1 o'clock. And before 2 o'clock today, JP Nakoda from Pension Plan Puppets will join us to talk a little bit about the Leafs and their game tonight. This is Nation Radio, presented by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 12:46. This is Nation Radio. Thanks so much for tuning in. We're here until 2 o'clock today. The latest information that we have available to us is that, this is from the Oilers, Corey Potter out for a month, high ankle sprain. Andy Sutton gone 7 to 10 days. Habby Boulin will start tonight, and Sam Gagner back in the lineup. The lineup looks like this. Ryan Nugent-Hopkins is centering Ryan Smith and Jordan Eberle. The two line is Sam Gagner with Magnus Pajärvi and Alex Hemsky, and Sean Horkoff is centering Taylor Hall and Ryan Jones. So they've broken up the veteran line and the kid line, and they've spread around the wealth. So the idea is that Hemsky will ignite Gagner and Pajärvi, and Taylor Hall will own that third line, and Jordan Eberle and Ryan Nugent-Hopkins stepping up with the big man, Ryan Smith. The four line is Belanger between Lander and Eager. That's that energy group. And the pairings are Smead with Gilbert, Peckham and Petrie, Chorney and Tubert, Habby Boulin in net. Don't take any unnecessary penalties. That would be the ideal thing, and then go from there. 12:47, give you an idea of what we're going to do in the next hour. Jesse Rogers from ESPN Chicago will join us, and we also have JP Nakota from Pension Plan Puppets and Leafs Nation. He will join us as well. And right now we're joined by Trevor from Arctic Ice Hockey. Trevor, how are you, man?
Oh, I'm good. I'm good. Thank you so much for having me on, Alan. It's a pretty cold day out here in Winnipeg, but it looks like you guys are in for the same weather out there. So
yeah, Trevor, how do you pronounce your last name?
You know what, Alan? You were incredibly close, and you're probably the closest anybody ever gets.
Okay.
It's pronounced Mon.
Mon. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, pretty good. I'll take that. I'll take that. Okay, let's talk about the Jets who are playing this afternoon. Flyers Jets. We all know that means a low scoring game, right?
Well, I'm hoping that lightning doesn't strike twice, and we don't see the same abysmal performance from both teams that we saw back in late October. But it should be definitely a great game. Obviously, the Ilya Bryzgalov story coming to Winnipeg is going to be huge, and the way that the fans have been getting on some of the star players like Stamkos and Ovechkin lately, I'm anticipating a rather warm welcome for Ilya once he makes his debut here tonight.
I saw him, and I don't remember the exact quote, but it was something like, "I didn't mean to offend anybody." But with what he said, I mean, I don't know how you could think anything else, right?
Well, and absolutely. And Alan, the thing about Winnipeg, and you guys would know just as well as we would, we're both cities that gets a stigma attached to us, where we're the smaller community, and you know, it's nothing but cold 10 months of the year, but what we do have is we both have very, very passionate fan bases, and that is definitely a slight that the fans take against them, and you know, even his apology, knowing the Jets fans here in this city, they won't let him off the hook that easily.
It'll be something to look forward to, and I understand Eric Fehr has been activated. Will he play tonight?
You know what? I just got a text from a really good friend of mine about a couple minutes before air here, and he said yes. The Fan 1290 or the Team 1290 here in Winnipeg is announcing that a player for the Jets has the flu. They haven't announced which player it is, but Fehr will be inserted into the lineup. He'll be playing with Jason Jaffray and Alexander Burmistrov today.
Oh, okay, so that would be okay. So they're mixing the lines up then, because that would be Kane's slot, right?
Absolutely. Well, and what's been going on lately, the last couple of games, and has had great success, is they kind of really mangled the lines up, and it's been Kane centered by Little, and then Burmistrov on the other line, and Kane's really been clipping along lately, and Little's starting to find his game a little more now that line was crafted, but now it looks like they're going to go in a little different direction tonight.
Well, and they have had, like, one thing that I noticed, they seem to be like the Oilers are now, kind of stagnant with the same lines, nothing really happened. They did a little shuffle, and then two big wins this week, right?
Well, absolutely. Two huge wins against divisional opponents. And basically, as Mike Tyson once said, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face. and Winnipeg and Claude Noel finally realized that if they want to be competitive in this league with the roster that they're fielding, they got to go out there and start punching people in the face. And they played really sound defensive hockey the last couple of games, and they're getting pucks deep, they're working their cycle, and they're making the easy plays, and that's why they're starting to see success come.
The thing that I notice about the Jets, especially after this recent run, their goal differential at even strength is -3 this season after 19 games, which extrapolated over the year would be about -12. They were -31 at even strength a year ago. That's a huge improvement. Is it goaltending? Is it systems? Is it being a year older? What do you think the major reason is that this team is better than last year's?
Well, that's actually a great question, Alan, and I'm glad that you're going to touch on that with me. This is a team that has now gone to their third coach in 3 years, and every coach has instilled a different system, and being able to follow Claude Noel last year as he coached the AHL Manitoba Moose here is that he does bring more of a defensive-minded system to the game. But there was a transition period there for a bit where defensive coverage was lapsing a bit. Andrei Pavlik has played outstanding hockey, and he's been asked to do a lot because Chris Mason has been on the shelf for quite some time with, I believe, a groin injury, and he's just getting back to the club now. But he's been playing really well, and the stats haven't really shown that for him, unfortunately, as the defense has really left him hung out to dry on a couple different occasions. But now they're starting to play a lot more of a cohesive game. They're being a lot more aggressive on their forecheck, and it's definitely helping them because teams are having a lot harder time to break the zone against them. And we saw that a lot against Washington the other night. Two of their goals, Canes, and I believe a goal, the first goal of the night, I'm not exactly sure who scored it, but they were direct correlations of a great forecheck along the boards and coming up with a loose puck battle and putting it in the net. So that's definitely the mantra that they're starting to go with now, and it's starting to pay dividends for them.
Well, if they can be around that even at even strength, even number, goals for and against, with that power play, when it gets rocking, like last night, I think it was last night, there it was a shooting gallery from the blue line. Bufflin was going to kill something the way he was going. They really do have the bullets to have an impressive power play.
Oh, absolutely. And right now, the main issue is that they haven't really had a chance to get on the power play all that much because they're second in the league in minor penalties. And not only that, but I'm sure that they lead the league by a large margin in 5-on-3s given up. I know for a fact that they were at 12 earlier this week. I believe they took one against Tampa Bay and one again against Washington. So they're probably up around 14, and I don't think any other team will come close. So it's really about trying to get that balance, trying to stay at even strength so that you can force the other team to take penalties as you're attacking and trying to limit your defensive zone penalties or offensive zone penalties that they've been taking. But they definitely have the tools and the players to set up a great power play. And the other thing is Toby Enstrom, who is really the guy that makes it quick for them, is out with his fractured collarbone right now, and he's out for a month. And they've been able to slot guys in. Mark Flood's been playing on the power play, a call-up from the AHL, who's filled in admirably. And right now, I think they're only scratching the surface of the potential that they have.
I want to get to a few players specifically right now. Edmonton Oilers fans will remember a lot of big forwards like Brad Winchester, Brad Isbister, who looked skilled, looked like hockey players, and really could not do anything offensively. One of the guys on the Winnipeg Jets that I see as a guy who looks like he should be scoring 20 goals a year or at least 15 is Blake Wheeler. He scored his first goal recently after, I think, 41 shots or something like that. Is this a guy who is just wooden around the net, or why so difficult in the offensive area?
Well, and that's another great point, too, and that's a big testament of why they've had such a slow start when guys like him and Wheeler and Ladd and Little had such a slow start. But really, he's one of those guys that you really need to insulate him properly. I was of the notion that if they wanted him to get going and start scoring goals, they would need to put him on the power play at some point to give him some kind of advantage. Because it really did appear that he was more snake-bitten than anything. Like, he's had some really, really good scoring chances. And like you said, Justin Bourne came out with an article over on Backhand Shelf the other day talking about players that had the most shots in the league and no goals to tell of it. And, yeah, Blake was definitely the top of that list by a wide margin. And when you're paying a guy like that $2.5 million, he's got to get going. But I honestly think that now the stats are going to start turning in his favor. He got that first goal. The monkey's off his back. And if they keep giving him some power play time and keep putting him in situations that he can succeed not playing on the fourth line, that he'll probably end up with a 15 to 18 goal season, I think.
Okay, excellent. A couple other quick ones. We're with Trevor Mond from Arctic Ice Hockey right now. Who's been the biggest surprise for you with the Jets this year?
Really, for me, there's a couple guys, and the thing is, what I'm really more impressed of on a whole is the fact that they've had so many injuries and call-ups from the AHL, and they haven't really missed a beat.
Mm-hmm.
But if I were to pick one player in particular, it would definitely be Alexander Burmistrov. Here's a kid that came into the NHL last year with Atlanta, didn't put up the offensive numbers that anybody was expecting of him. And some people thought that maybe it was better if he would have gone back to the OHL. But he's definitely quelled anybody's doubts in his offensive abilities this year. He's kind of slowed down a bit as of late. Him and Antropov were really rocking it together for a while. But now that he's found Little and Kane line, he's starting to produce again. And getting a guy like Eric Fair with the snapshot he has on his line will definitely get him a couple assists there as well. But really, it's a blue-collar group, and in order for them to win, they all have to band together, and they have to play a pretty spotless game in order to succeed.
And who, I mean, in watching them, I know Bufflin's been on and off and a little bit inconsistent. Kane didn't find his way for a while. Those are the two guys that I was kind of looking for. Who's been the MVP of this hockey team so far?
I would have to say Pavlik, just because of the amount of games he's been asked to play. I believe that Mason's only made three appearances. And I believe that the fourth appearance was in that 9-8 shootout against Philadelphia, where he was in and out and got injured. But he's definitely been the guy that the team runs through. They give up quality scoring chances on a pretty high average, and he's asked to make some big saves to keep them in games.
You know, one thing I want to tell you about the Winnipeg Jets fans, guys my age who are Jets fans, if Pavlich ends up being a really good goaltender, he'll own that town, because they could have gone a long way several seasons in a row if they'd had good goaltending back in the day. They were a good team otherwise.
Well, and that's another thing that that Winnipeg has to really realize is that this is a team. The True North Sports and Entertainment has basically come out and not made any high expectations or raised anybody's expectation levels. And they're really a team that likes to build from within. And Pavlik is going to have to be the cornerstone for them. And now looking at the St. John's Ice Caps down on the farm, they're leading the Eastern Division, and that's what it's going to be for a while. It's going to be a very slow build. Because they've traded off guys like Kovalchuk and traded off guys like Hossa back in Atlanta that haven't really had a return that Winnipeg can take from it. I believe the only player that's really helping Winnipeg from either of those trades right now is Johnny Oduya. So really, it's going to be a slow process. They're going to do a lot of rebuilding, but definitely at the heart of that rebuild, Andrei Pavlik is going to have to be a superstar goaltender.
Hey, enjoy the game, and thank you so much for this.
Alan, thank you so much. It was a pleasure being on, and good luck to your Edmonton Oilers tonight against Chicago.
You're a gentleman, Trevor. Thank you.
Take care.
Yep. You notice, Connor, how respectful the guests are? You might want to, you know, jump in there a little bit, you know. Remember Derek Zonowick once called me sir? You know, it's funny that when I'm on the air, there's all the respect, and when I'm off the air, there's really none at all, you know. Here comes the old man in those shorts, stuff like that, you know. Just saying.
Yes, sir.
Oh. See, is that so hard? That's Trevor Mond from Arctic Ice Hockey, and of course the Winnipeg Jets playing Philadelphia this afternoon. I love afternoon hockey. There's nothing like it on Saturday. It's like three in a row. It's like NFL fans must feel every Sunday. This is Nation Radio. Very busy second hour. We'll be talking to Jesse Rogers from ESPN Chicago. Get an update on that Chicago Blackhawks defense after we went 10 rounds with Sam on that one. And we'll also talk to JP Nakoda and set up the Maple Leafs in a very injury-filled game last night for them and see what's shaking. We'll talk about the Oilers, and I may actually reveal my first quarter grades, the Edmonton Oilers, coming up next. This is Nation Radio, presented by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
5 minutes after one, we are Nation Radio. You can email us at nationradio@team1260.com. We're on Twitter at It's Nation Radio. And also, I'm on Twitter as well, Low Tide_. And you go there, and you can find that I retweeted Connor's Movember item, and you can go on to Connor's Twitter and get him into the top 25,000 for Movember. That's our goal. By the way, the morning show guys are doing a great job on the Movember thing, too. Have you seen the brackets and everything? I'm thinking either George Peros, and my old-timey one is Charlie Huddy. People don't remember. Charlie Huddy had just a huge mustache. He did. He's a great player, too. And so looking forward to that. They'll, of course, keep you updated on that starting Monday morning, but check that out. It's also online. If you want to see the brackets, go to Team 1260's website, and it's there as well. Okay, some news for you if you're just tuning in to the radio and haven't heard this morning. Corey Potter, high ankle sprain, out for a month. Andy Sutton, 7 to 10 days. And Nicolas Habibulin will start in goal. Sam Gagné back in the lineup tonight. The lineup goes like this. There has been a shuffle in the pairings and lines. Nugent Hopkins centering Ryan Smith and Jordan Eberle. That's the first line. Then it's Gagné with Pajarvi and Hemsky, a trio who have to get it going. I think Gagné has one even strength point so far this year. Pajarvi about the same. And Hemsky has been off the last 4 or 5 days, not quite himself the last 4 or 5 games because, he's coming off injury again. Sean Horkoff between Taylor Hall and Ryan Jones. That's an interesting setup. And Eric Bélanger between Anton Lander and Ben Eager. The pairings are Smeed Gilbert, Peckham Petrie, Chorney, and Tubert. And as I mentioned, Nicolai Habibulin starting in goal tonight. So that's the latest. I always want to frame it and then say, okay, just a cautionary note here because, you know, Craig McTavish used to be the coach of the Edmonton Oilers, as you know, and they'd release the lines, and then within 3 minutes of the first period, Toby Peterson would be on the power play. So I'm just saying that although those are the lines, there is an opportunity for change always, and that could happen fairly easily. Last week, at this time, when we were doing Nation Radio, the Oilers were still in first place in the Northwest, despite having lost 2 games in a row. They were a point up on Minnesota, 3 points clear of Colorado and Vancouver, and 7 up on Calgary. And today, totally different. Oilers are now behind Minnesota, 5 points behind the Wild. Oilers are 1 ahead of Vancouver and Colorado, and they're both coming. And the 7-point lead over Calgary down to 3. And after Flames' victory last night, looks like they've got some things going too. With these injuries, especially to the blue line, the Oilers are already on a losing streak. They've lost 4 in a row, and you know, their away record is 3-5-1, and after tonight's game, they're on the road for 4 more. This is not a good place for the Edmonton Oilers. Their annual losing streak is set up beautifully, and hopefully they can turn it around, but it's going to be a great effort tonight with that defense. It's not anything against the players who have been called up, Tubert and Chorney, but that's going to be the Chicago Blackhawks are going to be loaded for bear. They're probably angry after losing last night. Coach Quenneville's probably has not been in a good mood the last 16 hours or so, and the Oilers are a team that has lost a lot of confidence and maybe isn't playing that well. So you know what? It's set. Obviously, the Oilers are the underdog, and sometimes the Oilers end up playing very well in those situations. It was a busy week. After 150 days, the Ryan Smith-Colin Fraser deal is finally final. Oilers trade Fraser and a 7th-round pick, plus some medical bills that they'll pick up, and that's the deal. One of the really bizarre trades in Oilers history, and I think it's going to end up being one of the best ones. Ryan Smith is playing unbelievably well. We're going to do the grading out of the Oilers players so far in the first quarter here in about 5 minutes, and I'm going to tell you what I think of Ryan Smith. Linus Omark out for 6 weeks with a broken ankle, and it might be a costly injury for him. As you know, he's RFA at the end of the year, and a player who has implied that he would not return to North America to play in the AHL. So it's either the Oilers or another NHL team, or he's probably back in the KHL or a Swedish Elite League next year. That could happen. And the timeline, the window of opportunity for Omark to be an Oiler, is obviously squeezed because of this 6-week injury. So that could be potentially devastating for Omark as an Oiler and for fans of Linus Omark. I think he's a heck of a hockey player. I just don't think it will be in Edmonton, or it looks like it might not be in Edmonton for him. Oscar Klefbom has a concussion. He was playing in an international friendly or whatever they call him over there against Russia. Hit his head, a Russian forward hit him, and he's out now. Hasn't played in at least a week, and a guy who has had he had a cut in training camp right at the end of training camp on this thigh, and that took a while to heal. Looks like he's having an injury-riddled season, and as you know, at that time for the 18-19 year old kids, to lose any kind of playing time can impact them, so it's not a positive indicator anyway. A bad arrow for Oscar Klefbom will follow that. The Oklahoma City Barons keep rolling along. They are an amazing story. You know, the Oilers call up 2 defensemen. They still won last night. Tyler Pitlick scored. Phil Cornet scored as well. 2 Barons, the Tobert and Chorney, were called held up, and that just meant more time for Plant and Lowry and Helmer, and they ended up winning the game. They play again tonight as well, the Oklahoma City Barons, so we'll keep you updated on that too. I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, I'm going to put this story up on Oilers Nation tomorrow, but at the end of the first quarter and second quarter and third quarter, I'll be doing report cards for the Edmonton Oilers and how well they've done. And there's one A-plus in the group through the first 20 games, and that's Ryan Smith. I think that those of us who were Ryan Smith fans when he played here, and that's pretty much everybody, thought he'd come back and play well and be a big part of the team. I don't think there's anybody who really felt he could play this well. Leading the team in points, playing against the tough opponents. The coach, for crying out loud, has put his two of his best young players with Smith tonight in the lineup shuffle. Wherever he goes, goals seem to follow. And it's been a magical 18 games for Ryan Smith in his return to the Edmonton Oilers. So he's the A+, and for me, he's the MVP of the first quarter of the season. I have three A's. Nikolai Habibulin, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, and Jordan Eberle. In the case of Habibulin, I know that he's fallen back to earth the last three or four games, but what a start to the season. I mean, that I don't remember the last time the Oilers had that kind of goaltending over a prolonged period, and it had to be 10 or 11 games that he played lights out at the beginning of the year. So he gets an A. Nugent Hopkins has been a revelation. Jonathan Willis mentioned that he's probably the favorite for the Rookie of the Year award for the Calder Trophy right now, and one of the reasons they're putting him up with Smith and Eberle tonight is he does seem to be able to have some two-way ability. So that's going to be interesting. But Nugent Hopkins, I think, deserves an A. And Jordan Eberle, just for his fine overall play, he's a guy who, although not the first overall pick like Hall and Nugent Hopkins, really has a big brain for the game, and it's very obvious. And I think he eventually will be a player who they can use on the penalty kill and the power play and at even strength and as a real leader. I think he's future captain material, and he's played very well. Not perfect, but very well, and he's a fine young player. My B's are Taylor Hall, Sean Horkoff, Corey Potter, Ryan Jones, Tom Gilbert, and Alex Hemsky. Hall, because just a little bit behind the other two. I think he's been fighting it a little bit and a little bit frustrated about how the year has gone so far. He did miss a game during the first 18. Fine talent. I think we're going to see him break out any time, and maybe tonight's the night. But for the first quarter, right now anyway, he's a B. Sean Horkoff had a really good start. The first 11, 12 games played well. Tailed off a little bit. The minuses are adding up, and he has not been as offensive lately. I think that's maybe another reason for the shuffle. Corey Potter had a great first few games. I'd say the first 12 to 15 games were good. He has been exposed a little bit in his decision-making the last few games, and now he's injured a little bit, so that's why he's a B as opposed to a higher mark. Ryan Jones is a player that I've been critical of in the past, but I thought he's had a brilliant first 18 games of the year. He's played on two different lines and been an energy player on both of them and has taken advantage of the opportunities he's had offensively. Had a good start to the season. Little doubt about that. Tom Gilbert's had a rough few games, but I still count him as a B just because of his overall ability and the fact that he's been the stone alone a lot of nights and played very well. And the Oilers are still above 500. They're a good team this year overall in the first 18 games, and I think Gilbert has been their best defenseman. Alex Hemsky, he gets a B because, you know what, he's uber talented guy, but he's been injured a lot, and ordinarily I'd have him an A plus if he's playing at his best, but he's just been a little bit off, certainly the last few games since coming back from the injury. My C's are Eric Bélanger, Devin Dubnyk, and Laddie Smead. Bélanger because of the face-offs, his ability on the penalty kill. His offense has not really come to the fore yet, although he's his 5x460 is a good number. I think he can do a little more offensively at even strength. Dubnyk has played well. He's been off a last little while, but early on he played exceptionally well, and I think there's a goaltender there. I'm a little disappointed that Coach Rennie seems to have gone to Dubnyk so much lately, or I'm sorry, Habibulin so much lately, but Dubnyk is a player who will get his opportunity. We know this because, you know, Habibulin, 38 years old, coaching staff starting to ride him a little bit. Either a slump or an injury are somewhat predictable for Habibulin, so Dubnyk's time will come this year. My C's, those were the C pluses I just mentioned, my C's are Petrell, Gagne, Sutton, and Petrie. Petrell because he's a great penalty killer. I think he gets more than a passing grade because of that. His Rel Corsi is the lowest on the team, so he's bleeding a bit 5x5. That's likely one of the reasons why he's a healthy scratch today. Sam Gagne, I have him there because a lot of the first 11 games that he played, you know, he hasn't been himself. He's been injured, coming along slowly. The last few games before this last back problem, he was playing much better, and hopefully he'll be good enough tonight to ignite something on that new line. Andy Sutton, big, tall, calm guy. I'd give him a higher mark, but his foot speed is a problem, and he gets passed a lot by the wingers, but he's a player who's come in and helped, no doubt. Jeff Petrie has been exposed. You know, he's a young player, but he's also played very well, and I think he's here to stay. With these injuries that have happened to Potter and others, I don't think there's much chance that Petrie gets sent down at all this year, and it looks like he's ready to establish himself. My D's are Anton Lander, Ben Eager, and Linus Omark. Lander started off very well, but I think that he's a player, he's in the lineup tonight, but I think he's a player that has probably, you know, lost himself a little bit in the last few games, and it's been tough, there's no doubt about it, but I think that Lander is a guy who's a candidate to be sent out to Oklahoma City, and that might have already happened without the Linus Omark injury. Ben Eager has been a disappointment, and the caveat is that the concussion probably has impacted his ability to play the style that he's most familiar with, but he's been a bit of a disappointment. There's no doubt on that fourth line. Doesn't really supply the energy. He does go to the net, but not all the time. And, you know, I think he's more skilled than he's shown. So we'll call it a disappointment, but we do also understand that there's a reason behind it, because in the last, I would say, little while, you know, the concussion definitely impacted him. We also have, as a D, Linus Omark. He played 5 games before being sent down. I don't think he really got a chance, somewhat like Pajarvi, but he's a guy that the Edmonton Oilers should really have a look at. He's skilled enough to play on the top 9. Not ranked are Plante, Tubert, Hordachuk, Ryan Whitney, and Taylor Chorney, because they didn't play enough, but those are my report cards, and I'll have them up on Oilers Nation sometime in the next 24 hours, probably early tomorrow. We got a very busy show. We've got Leafs talk and Oilers talk still to come. Jesse Rogers from ESPN Chicago is just around the corner, and we'll also talk to JP Nakoda from Pension Plan Puppets and Leafs Nation, and that'll happen before 2:00. This is Nation Radio, presented by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
It's 1:22, very busy day in the hockey world. Jets up 1-0 over Philadelphia on a Brian Little power play goal. And Brian Burke is now on Twitter. It's Leafs BB, both capitals, 20. And his first 2 tweets are, "Hello, folks, Brian Burke here. I'm finally joining Twitter. Ignore any fake accounts elsewhere." And then his second one is, "I plan to use my Twitter account to inform fans, hopefully entertain you, and to provide clarity about the Leafs when needed." So that I was hoping he'd go with Truculent 12 or something like that. But Brian Burke is on Twitter. You want to check that out, because one thing about Brian Burke, no matter what else you say about him, he's an entertaining guy. And I think he does do a lot for the fans. So look forward to that. It's going to be an interesting time with Brian Burke. Now, Ron Wilson is on as well, but he talks about like his kids and I think grandkids and stuff. And he seems very soft on Twitter. He doesn't really come across as the Ron Wilson that we know and love. So look forward to that. Oilers in action tonight. If you have not heard, Corey Potter gone for a month. Andy Sutton out 7 to 10 days. So the 2 call-ups, Chorney and Tubert, will play tonight, and they'll be on the 3rd pairing. We're joined by Jesse Rogers from ESPN Chicago. Jesse, good afternoon. Are you in the city or are you in Chicago?
No, Alan, I'm on my way in from Calgary. I'm driving with 3 other beat reporters to Edmonton. So the only 4 people that really know anything about the Hawks are in this car. You've made the right phone call, my friend.
Well, I'll look forward. We'll probably just pass the phone around here.
Yeah, we could do that. These guys know more than I do.
Hey, what kind of mood should the Hawks be in tonight after that effort in Calgary last night?
An ornery one for sure. They are. They were on a roll, and last night it got derailed a little bit. Calgary, I think, doesn't exactly fit the Hawks' style very well. Joe Quimble talked about that after the game a year ago at this time, a year ago today, in fact. They lost 7-2 to the Flames and then went on to beat Vancouver. They just came off beating Vancouver, their 4th win in a row by more than 3 or more goals. And then they hit that Flame team last night. And the Flames really were a desperate team. We were talking in the car here. Olli Jokinen had a great game. They played well in the Hawks' zone, and the Hawks did not play well in their own zone. It was 1-1 after one, but the final 40 minutes, the Hawks fell apart. So you're going to get an ordinary group, and teams like Edmonton and Vancouver fit the Hawks' style a little bit better with you know the way they skate.
Well, the thing about the Hawks that I noticed last night, with their best players didn't appear to be their best players, and I think we saw that with Duncan Keith maybe getting benched in the third period. Is that the worst game he's played in quite some time?
Yeah. And he had a down year last year coming off the championship and the Norris Trophy. He had a little bit of an average start. Then he got hurt, and then he, since he came back from that injury, was really on a tear, playing his best hockey in probably over a year since the Norris Trophy. He was a plus player during the four-game win streak every game. And then last night, just the bottom fell out, a -4. Second game without his usual partner, Brent Seabrook. Maybe that had an effect. But I just think he just had a bad game, a bad start, too. Lee Stepniak really undressed him on a goal in the first period. I think, you know, that may have hurt Keith mentally for the rest of the night.
What kind of an impact, you know, I watch Chicago quite a bit, and they're an interesting team because they're fast and they're skilled. What kind of an impact has Kane moving to center had on this roster?
Well, Stan Bowman, actually, the general manager, talked about that before the game. What it's done is it's given them two real dangerous lines that opponents have to choose which one they're going to check, and that's either Taves at center or Kane at center. And right now, it's actually Marian Hossa that's making the top lines work. He was with Kane for the first 13 or 14, 15 games, and that was the best line of the team. Now he's been moved up with Jonathan Taves, and that line's been great. Taves have been on fire since moving with Hossa. 5 games, 10 points for Taves, 9 points for Hossa since moving with Taves. So it's really been Hossa that's been the best player on those two lines if you go from the start of the season till now. Kane's cooled off a little bit without him, but it still gives the opponent something to worry about here with those two guys centering the lines. And Kane's been surprisingly good in his own zone, even in the faceoff circle, even though the numbers aren't the best. He's held his own, let's put it that way, and he's had the puck more, and that's exactly what they wanted when they moved him to center.
If they keep him there with Taves and Kane and Bolin moving forward, at the deadline, the Hawks are likely to look at a winger in trade, right?
Well, I think a winger, yeah, because there's a couple spots open right now. Victor Stahlberg's on the top line. Dan Carcillo, a lot of people surprised by him sticking on the second line. So, yeah, you could imagine one of those two guys being moved down. They still might go after a center. I'm not convinced that Kane doesn't move back to wing in the playoffs. I think at the end of the day, with the amount of money they have to spend, which is about $6 million in cap space, they'll just go out and get the best top six guy they can get, whether it's a center, a left wing, or a right wing, and go forward from there. And you never know about defense. You can never have enough blue liners, so they could be looking there as well, especially when you consider injuries. Duncan Keith was hurt. Brent Seabrook is hurt right now, and that's always, you know, a precarious position if you go into the playoffs without a full roster at the blue line.
In conversation with Jesse Rogers from ESPN Chicago, by the way, the Jets are up 2-0 over Philadelphia right now. In watching the Hawks...
Did my boy Bufflin score?
You know, the first one was... I think Bufflin got an assist on the first goal, but that's about it.
All right. I'm a big fan.
Oh, he's a great hockey player. In watching the Hawks this season, I get the same feeling as I did in 2010, as in their opponents could be up a creek as soon as they start passing that puck around. Does this team, it obviously looks a lot better than last year's. Do they have the talent level to approach the 2010 level, the Stanley Cup
year? Yeah, they do. Now that 2010 team was something special, though. I don't think they can have that sort of unique chemistry on and off the ice. That seems like a once-in-a-lifetime type of thing. They were just so much fun to be around and so good on the ice. But they have the talent level. I'm more and more I watch them now. I think last year was all about that hangover in the short summer. I use this analogy a lot back in Chicago. You know, the Cubs haven't won a championship in over 100 years. What do you think the year after they win it will be? And in the same vein here, the Hawks hadn't won a championship in 49 years. They won it. What'd you expect them to win it right back again? It was a huge party that went on and on and on. So I think the hangover just lasted basically the whole season last year. Now they're hungry again, starting with Jonathan Taves. They're rested again, starting with Duncan Keith, for example. And they have the talent, and they have some young players, which you always need. Marcus Kruger's off to a good start. Nick Leddy's off to a great start. A couple other guys, Ben Smith just recalled. He was a playoff hero last year. So they seem to have the right mix both on and off the ice.
The heart of this team for the Hawks, I think, is Taves, Kane, Keith, Seabrook, Hossa, Sharp. You mentioned Nick Leddy, and I'll throw Corey Crawford in there as well. Are those two candidates to join that group as the heart of the team moving forward in the next 4 or 5 years?
Which two candidates?
Crawford and Leddy.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. Absolutely. I think Crawford's already there. I really do. A lot of people are asking about his sophomore year. He's not exactly a 22-year-old playing in his second year. He was in the minors for five seasons and was basically the next goalie, but they just kept on, you know, signing these veterans mistakenly, you know, going back to even Hobby Bullen, didn't have exactly a great career here in Chicago. Then they went to Huey and then Turco, and he had to wait his turn. So I think Corey Crawford's already part of the core. Yeah, I think the way they think of Nick Leddy, he's advancing exactly the way they wanted. They traded Brian Campbell, moved Nick Leddy into that role, and he hasn't disappointed. Now, he's not exactly, you know, polished in terms of defenseman, and he shouldn't be at 20 years old, but you see the signs there. He's much better offensively than he was a year ago, and he's getting there defensively, even though he still has a ways to go. But yeah, it looks like those two are part of sort of the secondary core for sure. And I think Crawford is part of the first core.
You mentioned earlier about the Hawks being better, you know, for the Oilers and Canucks better opponents or a better matchup for them. How important is this road trip to give Chicago and specifically management an indicator about how good this team is right now before the changes?
Yeah, you know, I don't think that important. They're already proving that they're a good team. Now it's just about gelling and becoming a great team. I mean, they're on top of the West. I don't think they're going to lose the next four games on the trip. So even if they go 500, I think it's okay. They traditionally play well on this trip over the last few years. They love playing in San Jose. The matchup against L.A. is great. You go to that Honda Center and, you know, you have to wake everybody up in that building, so that could go either way. Usually they play well in Edmonton, the fast ice and the skating ability for both teams. So I don't think this trip, you know, really determines a lot like it did 5 to 10 years ago. It usually would derail their whole season. So I think they know they have a good team. Now it's about becoming a great team, if it isn't already. I mean, the four-game win streak they just had was just unbelievable. They were blowing people out.
You know, you mentioned about waking up a building. One of my favorite things about watching WGN Hawks games is pregame show. It looks absolutely incredible. The blow the roof off with the anthem. How long has that been the case, and how did that get started? Can you give me the background on that?
Yeah, the Gulf War back in '91. If you recall, the Hawks Chicago hosted the All-Star game. Now that was in the old building. The stadium, and I believe it may have been the last year at the stadium. And, you know, as a show of respect to the troops and obviously what was going on overseas, there was the cheering, you know, went on during the anthem and was just an unbelievable moment for anybody that was there, the chills up the spine. And it's continued since. And again, it's out of respect, and it certainly is different than any other building in any other sport in either country. And it's just, it is an amazing feeling, and the beauty is you get that energy in it no matter who the opponent is, because once in a while you're playing, you know, the Florida Panthers when they were bad, and you got to muster some energy, but the anthem gets the players going even if it's, you know, the middle of December against a down opponent. Now, sometimes the energy doesn't last the whole game, but it's pretty thrilling, and when you talk to opposing teams and rookies that come in there for the first time, they even get that chill and get juiced for the game. So it really sets the tone. Sometimes, again, it doesn't last the whole game or whatever, but it's really cool to experience that, you know, night in and night out for those of us in the media.
Any roster changes for tonight? Anybody coming in, drawing into the lineup that wasn't playing last night?
Well, first of all, Ray Emery is, you know, most likely going to start. That's not official, but it looks like Ray Emery's going to start. He's undefeated as a starter. He lost one game in overtime, but he's had a point in every game. The Hawks have had a point in every game he's played. He's been fine. No issues as a backup goalie with Ray Emery. They might pull out a defenseman and bring back 40-year-old Sean O'Donnell. It's been a healthy scratch lately. That remains to be seen. But other than that, Michael Frolik is banged up. He may or may not play. I'm thinking he's doubtful just because they have a little break before the second half of this trip. Ran into the boards in two games ago. Brent Seabrook is out. So the one chance, I think, is Sean O'Donnell along with Ray Emery entering the lineup.
How long is Seabrook out? Any word on that?
I think he's going to be back next week. Again, a little break here till Wednesday when they play San Jose. He's missed two games. They split them. They're in first place. There's no reason to go crazy in terms of bringing a guy back early. So with the extra 3 days off after this one, I think he'll probably play Wednesday, but there's no guarantee of that. He's got to skate first to know.
How far are you away from Edmonton now?
Adam, how far away from Edmonton are we? About an hour still. We stopped at Red Deer for a little lunch at, I think it was Max's, I think. Moxie's, something like that.
Moxie's,
And we're on our way in. Nice little meal there.
All right. Yeah, Moxie's a good place. What'd you have?
I had the seafood linguine. I'm a steak and potatoes guy, but that'll be tonight at the arena. I'm figuring they'll have something like that, so I went with the pasta.
So you're kind of saving up the calories for the Edmonton grub.
Listen, on a two-week road trip, you have to save wherever you can, because usually you're eating in all sorts of weird times and bad food. But I'm hoping at your place tonight it'll be a good meal.
Jesse, thank you so much for this. Appreciate it.
Anytime. Talk to you soon.
Okay, drive safely. Catch you later. That's Jesse Rogers from ESPN Chicago giving us an update on the Hawks. We've had two completely different discussions with two different individuals about the Chicago Blackhawks, but I think we kind of have an idea about what to expect. And honestly, it's not just the weather. It's not just my trick knee. I think that the Edmonton Oilers are going to be in tough tonight. And if they get out of there with even a point, that should be considered to be a victory, because these Hawks are going to be grumpy. And they're a fine hockey team. And the Oilers, as you know, are a little bit injured, and they're not exactly at their high ebb confidence-wise. So should be an interesting game, number two in Hockey Night in Canada. The Hockey Night in Canada game that's on right now, have they posted the score yet? Because I know two goals have gone in, and it still looks like it's 0-0. What's going on there, Connor?
I don't even know. Now they're just going back to the, McLean and Healy and... I don't...
Well,
CVC.
There you go. It's your tax dollars at work, ladies and gentlemen. So,
they're trying.
There you go. It's 1:36. We've got JP Nakoda from Pension Plan Puppets and Leafs Nation on the way. This is Nation Radio, presented by Edmonton Motors.
This is Nation Radio with Alan Mitchell, a.k.a. Low Tide. Presented by Edmonton Motors.
Only on Edmonton Sports Radio.
Team 1260.
19 minutes to 2 o'clock. We're around till the top of the hour. And a few items from Jason Greger and the game day thread that he's put up at Oilers Nation. Some of this we've been talking about today. Corey Potter out for a month. That's courtesy Tom Rennie and the Oilers. Linus Omark broken his ankle in Oklahoma City, and he's out for 6 weeks. Andy Sutton expected to be out for 7 to 10 days. Here's a couple items that we haven't talked about yet. Ryan Whitney still skating in the baby blue non-contact jersey. He likely won't be available at the earliest until Friday or Saturday in Minnesota or Colorado. That's according to Jason. And what a crazy schedule they've got. The first place Hawks tonight, fifth place Stars on Monday, fourth place Preds on Tuesday, and second place Wild on Friday. And that's why that game against the Ottawa Senators was so important the other night. And, they just showed up flat. And now you're feeling, like Chicago's coming in here after that game last night in Calgary and unlikely to be, they're not unlikely to be a team that is going to, come up lame two nights in a row. So it's tough for the Edmonton Oilers. Every year it seems as though there's a fast start and then there's a long streak of winless games, and everything's setting up right now. Interesting that Coach Rennie has, moved the lines around a little bit, trying to see if there's an opportunity there to shake it up and get some secondary scoring, and that blue line is going to be an interesting item tonight over the next little while. You wonder, with this situation, if Steve Tannellini is possibly thinking about making a move, even a minor one, signing one of those veterans that are available to just get through the next 2 weeks or so. Sutton comes back, and then possibly Whitney, then things look a little bit better. Well, I'll look forward to that. It's 1:43 now. We're joined by J.P. Nakoda from Pension Plan Puppets and Leafs Nation. JP, how are you?
Doing well. How about you?
Very well. It's a beautiful day. Where are you, Toronto?
No, I'm actually in London.
London, okay.
Ontario.
What's the weather look like there?
Overcast, but still no snow. So, we've got a leg up on a lot of people already.
All right. Well, one more reason to dislike Ontario. No, I'm teasing. I'm just this week over at our Leafs Nation, you did a monster post about Leafs scoring chances. I thought it was fascinating because the two best Leafs by my eye, Phaneuf and Kessel, are the best in that metric by so much. You'd think that their line mates would be similar, but those guys have just been outstanding from the first start of the first game this year.
Well, yeah, really. And I think that's actually a testament to how effective a statistic it is to track. I mean, if what you are coming up with in terms of numbers matches exactly what you see with your eyes, that's a pretty good indication that, it's a worthwhile thing to keep track of.
In looking at that list, and this is me just tracking it, you tell me if I'm wrong, it looked to me like the secondary group, aside from those two, that really had him impressed or done well, at least for a major portion of the first quarter of the season, were Gunnarsson, Grabowski before injury, Kuhlman, and MacArthur. Does that fit with what you've seen?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that the Grabowski and MacArthur and Kuhlman line has just been really failing to get bounces. And now, of course, with two out of three of them down with injury, who knows when they're going to be able to get back on track. But I think really it's just been a case of bad bounces for them, because they really have been creating chances. And, you know, other measures like their Corsi numbers indicate that they've been pushing the play in the right direction. It's just a question of, you know, waiting for the dam to burst.
The Leafs are, you know, you mentioned injuries, and it seems like every game they're losing two more guys. It was Komisarek and Lombardi last night, right, or the night before?
Yeah, the night before there, which was unfortunate because Lombardi had just played one of probably his best games in Maple Leafs so far. And he was one of the guys that really hadn't looked good, you know, in the scoring chance standings as well. You know, one advantage for this, well, I hate to say advantage, because we're talking about guys being injured, but one really good thing this year for the Leafs is that they do have a little bit of depth at forward. You know, not heaps, but I mean, this is a really great chance for guys like Nazem Kadri or Joel Colborne, who has been tearing up the AHL so far, to really get a chance to shine in the bigs, you know? And I think that it's good that it's you know, probably a limited time frame, right? As soon as these guys come back from injury, these guys are going to go back down to the AHL and continue sort of seasoning there.
One of the things about following the Leafs this year, or at least I guess since Burke and Wilson arrived on the scene, is everything seems to become larger than life. And I mentioned that in relation to the James Reimer injury situation. I'm not going to ask how this could have been better handled, but how much of a impact has had all the stuff going on aside from what's on the ice and the goaltending? How much impact does that have on the Leafs as a team, do you think? Is it something that nobody pays attention to, or does it have an impact on a young guy like Reimer?
You know, it's really tough to say. I feel like I can't really speak for the Leafs. It's probably a case-by-case thing, too, right? I mean, if you ask Kessel how fed up does he get with the media, he'd probably say, yeah, pretty fed up. If you ask James Reimer, maybe he'd say something different. And then, of course, there's the whole question of whether or not that actually does impact how they play on the ice. I think it's a pretty common narrative that people have been bringing up in the media, you know. Oh, my gosh, all this pressure. They can't stand it. You know, their play is going to suffer. But, you know, there's nothing, you know, there's really no way to prove that that's the case. So I tend to sort of sit that argument out a little bit.
With regard to Reimer, he's back and practicing. He should make a significant difference in this team's fortunes when he's healthy again, because, you know, his save percentage tells us he is superior to the other two guys.
Well, absolutely. I mean, there's no question. I mean, excuse me. Jonas Gustafsson, I hate to say it, but the man is just not an NHL goaltender. You know, it's been 3 years now, and, you know, some people will say, well, you know, he got limited playing time with Giguere and then, you know, Reimer's surge at the end of last season. But the truth is that if he had looked like the better of the three goalies in practice, he would have saw more time. I think that, you know, this is an experiment that has more or less come to its end. He may get into a couple more games this season, but I would be extraordinarily surprised to see him back again next season. I wouldn't be surprised if Burke started perusing the veteran goaltender market pretty soon.
Washington in town tonight. It's the early game on Hockey Night in Canada. Anything Leafs fans can look for in the way of lineups? Is Joel Colborne going to draw in? I know he's been called up.
He should be in the lineup. I actually haven't checked on that yet today, but you know what? I expect to see he and Kadri in the lineup. Though, don't quote me on that. I just got off work. I need to double check on that.
I can ask you a Kadri question though, because here's a guy who you know, I mean, he was obviously drafted in the top 10, talented guy. The Leafs have had him up and down like a yo-yo a little bit, but he looks like a player. Has Colborne passed him on the prospect depth chart, or do they really still have high hopes for Kadri?
You know, I really think they do still have high hopes for Kadri. The fact that he's been sort of bounced up and down the depth chart a little bit is a testament to how many players have been moved in and out over the past, you know, season and a bit. Moreover, the Kadri and Colborn playing different positions, you know, shouldn't feel like they're in competition for the same spot, right? Mm-hmm. They bring different things. Colborn probably a little more size, a little bit more of a power forward game, whereas Kadri is going to see probably more power play time. His hands are probably the best in the Leafs prospect system. I think there's not a chance the Leafs have given up on either of them, and I'm still really looking forward to see what he can do. Still a lot to grow in the room.
Yeah, the question comes from Cameron here. It says, is Luke Shen still untouchable in trade? And I ask that knowing that Komisarek is obviously hurt now and Franson will draw in, so it's not like they would be, you know, trading him imminently. But has Shen dropped down the depth chart to the point where he may be expendable?
Well, you know, I don't know if you could ever really say he was untouchable. I think if the right deal came along, Burke would move almost any one of these players. So I you know, in one word right now, is Shen, you know, could he be traded? Sure, I think it's a possibility. Do I think it's a probability? No. I also should add that I think trading Shen right now would probably be foolhardy because, you know, we know he's capable of better. Last season, he looked far better, much more confident distributing the puck, much better positionally than he is now. And I think to, you know, sort of sell low, if you will, would probably be a mistake.
The Toronto Maple Leafs have been in the news for a couple of things in the last 24 hours that are somewhat off-ice issues, one of which is Wayne Gretzky possibly being part of an ownership group. I know that Damian Cox said today he had contacted Gretzky. Gretzky never heard anything about this. Is this a ownership deal that could come together four or five different companies or individuals who are interested in buying this team? Is this just another one of those media things where they're trying to involve Wayne Gretzky and Toronto Maple Leafs and trying to overcome that 93 trade that never happened? Or do you think there's some substance to this?
You know, I suspect that it's probably mostly speculation. You know, if you ask just about anybody, you know, would you like to be the owner of the Toronto Maple Leafs one day? I you know, if you're someone who likes money, you're probably going to say yes. So, you know, I feel like any tiny little comment, any little hint that it might be sort of an intriguing idea might have been run with. Though again, you know, I'm not someone that's willing to speculate on exactly how interested any particular individual is here.
Well, all I can tell you is that I'd love to have my pension money with the Toronto Maple Leafs. I think that would be pretty secure based on their history and their likely future. A quick one as well. Did you know that Brian Burke is on Twitter now?
Oh, well, yeah, I think that'll be an interesting feed to follow.
Ron Wilson is disappointing because he sounds like such a nice guy on his Twitter. I know he probably has glass for breakfast, but it doesn't really come out on Twitter with him.
Yeah, you know, it'd be much more entertaining if, you know, we had explosive anger and you know, story after story of, you know, raging after fans. But, you know, this is good, too.
Hey, listen, thanks so much for this, and enjoy the game tonight, and I appreciate your time very much.
All right, well, thanks for having me.
I love that blog, Pension Plan Puppets. They do a great job. That's JP Nakota, and he's also, of course, part of Leafs Nation, and they do great work over there as well. His scoring chances that he's been tracking, did I think the first 17 games in mass, and then has been doing them individually since then, and it's very interesting stuff. If you're a Toronto Maple Leafs fan, Kessel and Phaneuf have been as good as advertised and as good as you think they are. They are outstanding, and they've had a great, great year so far. Kessel, there's no way he's going to get chosen last for the All-Star team this year. News for you, Edmonton Oilers fans, Corey Potter gone for a month, high ankle sprain, and Andy Sutton has gone 7 to 10 games. We also know Cam Barker is out. Whitney's still on the shelf, so Oilers fans are hoping that at some level there'll be some movement, but so far, just two call-ups, Colton Tubert and Taylor Chorney. They'll be the third pairing tonight against the Chicago Blackhawks. Oilers lines for tonight, they are Ryan Nugent-Hopkins between Smith and Eberle, Horkoff between Jones and Hall, Gagne between Pajarvi and Hemsky, and Belanger between Eager and Lander. Going to be an interesting game tonight. My thanks to our guest, Jonathan Willis, was in earlier with Copper and Blue and Oilers Nation. Sam Fells from Second City Hockey. Trevor Mon from Arctic Ice Hockey had an interesting conversation about the Jets. They're up 2-0. Jesse Rogers, fun time driving in from Calgary to Edmonton from ESPN Chicago. We talked about the Hawks, and also JP Nakota, just from the Pension Plan Puppets and the Leafs Nation as well. It's been a great show. Thank you so much. Enjoy the game tonight. Drive safely. Be careful out there. And happy Movember to Connor. Looking good, buddy. 25,000. Top 25,000. That's what we're looking for. Have a great weekend.